This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Vision of the Future, by Timothy Zahn. Read for you by Mark Thompson. Chapter 1. The Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera slid through the black of space, its only companion, the silent gas giant world of Pessetine far below. Admiral Pellion was standing at the forward viewport, gazing out at the dead planet, when Captain Ardiff arrived on the bridge.
"Report from Major Hotch, Admiral," he said briskly. "All damage from that pirate attack has been repaired. Your ship is back to full fighting readiness."
"Thank you, Captain,"
Pellion said, carefully hiding a smile. In the 30 hours since the failed attack on the Chimera, Ardiff had gone from believing it to be a raid by New Republic General Garm Bell Iblis to suspicions that it had been engineered by dissident Imperial elements to similar suspicions involving similarly dissident rebels, and was now apparently convinced that a pirate gang was responsible. Of course, in all fairness, Ardiff had had the past 30 hours to cogitate on his theories. The tech's preliminary report on the debris from the destroyed Kaloth battlecruiser had certainly influenced his thinking, too.
"Anything new from the patrols?"
Pellion asked.
"Just more negatives, sir," Ardiff said. "Still no indications of activity anywhere in the system. Oh, and the sensor stealthed assault shuttle you sent on the attacker's escape vector also just checked in. Still no trace."
Pellion nodded. As expected, really. Anyone who could afford to buy and fly a battlecruiser usually knew a few tricks about hiding it.
"It was worth a try,"
he told Ardiff.
"Have them try one more system. We can transmit that far without relays. If they haven't picked up the trail by then, order them back."
"Yes, sir,"
Ardiff murmured. Even without looking, Pellion could sense Ardiff's hesitation.
"A question, Captain?"
he prompted.
"It's this communications blackout, sir," Ardiff said. "I don't like being so completely out of contact this way. It's like being blind and deaf. And frankly, it makes me nervous."
"I don't much like it myself,"
Pellion conceded.
"But the only ways to make contact with the outside universe are to either transmit to an Imperial relay station or punch our way onto the holonet. And the minute we do either, everyone from Coruscant to Bastion will know we're here. If that happens, we'll have more than the occasional pirate gang lining up to take pot shots at us."
"And," he added silently, "it would be the end of any chance for a quiet meeting between him and Bell Iblis, assuming the General was indeed willing to talk."
"I understand all that, Admiral," Ardiff said. "But has it occurred to you that yesterday's attack might not have been an isolated incident against an isolated Imperial ship?"
Pellion cocked an eyebrow.
"Are you suggesting it might have been part of a coordinated attack against the Empire?"
"Why not?" Ardiff said. "I'm willing to concede at this point that it probably wasn't the New Republic who hired them. But why couldn't the pirates have set it up on their own? The Empire has always come down hard on pirate gangs. Maybe a group of them got together and decided the time was right for revenge."
Pellion stroked his lip thoughtfully. On the surface, it was a ridiculous suggestion. Even on its deathbed, the Empire was far stronger than any possible aggregate of pirate gangs could hope to defeat. But that didn't mean they wouldn't be foolish enough to try.
"That still leaves the question of how they knew we were here,"
he pointed out.
"We still don't know what happened to Colonel Vermel,"
Ardiff reminded him.
"Maybe it was this pirate coalition who snatched him. He could have told them about Pessetine."
"Not willingly,"
Pellion said darkly.
If they did what it would take to make him talk, I'll decorate Bastion's moon with their hides.
Yes, sir, Artif said. But that brings us back to the question of how long we're going to stay here.
Pelion looked out the viewport at the stars. Yes, that was indeed the question. How long should they wait here in the middle of nowhere in the hope that this slow attrition of the Empire could be stopped? They could end this war with the New Republic with a shred of territory and dignity still intact. That they could finally have peace.
2 weeks, he said. We'll give Belleblis another 2 weeks to respond to our offer.
Even though the message may not have reached him?
The message reached him,
Pelion said firmly.
Vermel is a highly resourceful, highly competent officer. Whatever happened to him, I have no doubt he completed his mission first.
Yes, sir, Artif said, his tone making it clear that he didn't share Pelion's confidence. And if Bel Iblis doesn't come within the time frame?
Pelion pursed his lips.
We'll decide then.
Artif hesitated, then took half a step closer to his superior. You really believe this is our best hope, sir, don't you?
He said quietly. Pelion shook his head.
No, Captain,
he murmured.
I believe it's our only hope.
The wedge of approaching Sinar IPv4 patrol ships broke in perfect formation to both sides, and the Imperial Star Destroyer Relentless glided smoothly between the reforming clusters toward its designated orbital position.
Very impressive, Moff Deisra growled to the slim man beside him, hearing his heart pounding in his ears as he gazed across the bridge at the green-blue world framed in the forward viewport. I trust you didn't haul me all the way out here just to watch the Kroktarian Home Defense Forces maneuvers.
Patience, Your Excellency,
Major Groden Tierce said, quietly at his side.
I told you we had a surprise for you.
Deisra felt his lip twist. Yes, that's what Tierce had said, and that was all Tierce had said. And as for Flim... Deisra shifted his gaze to the Admiral's chair, feeling his lip twist a little more. Their tame con man was sitting there, bold as brick brass in his blue skin makeup and glowing red eye surface inserts, and his white Grand Admiral's uniform. The absolute laser-trimmed image of Grand Admiral Thrawn, a masquerade solidly believed by every Imperial aboard the Relentless, from Captain Dorja on down. Trouble was, there weren't any Imperials on the planet below them. Far from it. Kroktar, merchant center and capital of Shaitalm Sector, was deep in the New Republic territory, with every bit as much military firepower as one would expect such a world to have. There was no guarantee that any of them would be impressed by Flim's eyes and uniform and acting ability. And if they weren't, this cozy little triumvirate Deisra had formed was about to blow up in their faces. Flim might look like Thrawn, but he had all the tactical genius of a garbage pit parasite. Tierce, a former stormtrooper and royal guardsman under Emperor Palpatine, was the military brains of their little group. And if Captain Dorja saw an allegedly lowly major rush over to the allegedly brilliant Grand Admiral to give him advice, his whole illusion would explode into soap scum. Whatever bluff Tierce was running here, it had better work.
Transmission from the surface, Admiral, the comm officer called from the portside crew pit. It's Lord Superior Boss Mihi, chief of the Unified Factions.
On speaker, Lieutenant, Thrawn said.
Lord Superior Boss Mihi, this is Grand Admiral Thrawn. I received your message. What may I do for you?
Deisra frowned at Tierce.
They called us, he muttered.
Tierce nodded, a small but satisfied smile playing around his lips.
Shh, he said. Listen.
We offer you greeting, Grand Admiral Thrawn.
A nasally alien voice boomed over the comm.
and we congratulate you most heartily on your triumphal return.
Thank you, Thrawn said smoothly. As I recall, you were somewhat less enthusiastic at our last meeting.
Deesra threw Tyrs a sharp look.
During his sweep through this sector 10 years ago,
Tyrs murmured.
Don't worry. He knows all about it.
The alien gave a blubbering laugh.
Ah, yes. You remember most clearly. At that time, the fear of Imperial power and the lure of promised freedoms still held sway over us.
Such lies held sway over many, Thrawn agreed. Does your choice of words imply the Croctari have come to a new understanding?
There was a disgusting, wheezy-sounding noise from the comm.
We have seen the crumbling of the promise,
the Lord Superior said regretfully.
There is no longer any order emanating from Coruscant. No focused goals, no clear structures, no discipline. 1,000 different alien species tug the galaxy in 1,000 different directions.
Inevitably, Thrawn said. That was why Emperor Palpatine first inaugurated the New Order. It was an attempt to reverse the collapse you now see coming.
Yet we were also warned not to trust Imperial promises. The history of the Empire is one of brutal subjugation of non-human species.
You speak of the rule of Palpatine, Thrawn said. The Empire has freed itself from his self-destructive anti-alien bias.
Your presence in this place of command is some evidence of that. Still, others still say the bias exists.
Others still lie about the Empire in many ways, Thrawn countered. But there's no need for you to take my word for it. Speak to any of the 15 alien species currently living under Imperial rule. Beings who cherish the protection and stability we offer.
Yes, protection.
The Lord Superior seemed to pounce on the word.
The Empire is said to be weak, yet I perceive that you still have great strength. What guarantee of safety do you offer your member systems?
The best guarantee in the galaxy, Thrawn said.
And even Deesra felt a shiver run through him at the veiled power and menace that was suddenly in the con man's voice.
My personal promise of vengeance, should anyone dare attack you.
There was a noise that sounded midway between a swallow and a burp.
I see,
Boss Mihi said soberly.
I understand that this is rather sudden, and for this I apologize. But on behalf of the unified factions of the Krakhari people, I would like to petition you for readmission into the Empire.
Deesra looked at Tyrs, feeling his jaw drop a few millimeters.
Readmission? He hissed.
Tyrs smiled back.
Surprise, Your Excellency.
On behalf of the Empire, I accept your petition, Thrawn said. You no doubt have a delegation standing ready to discuss the details.
You understand my people well, Grand Admiral Thrawn. Yes, my delegation does indeed await your pleasure.
Then you may signal them to approach, Thrawn told him. As it happens, Imperial Moff Deesra is currently aboard the Relentless. As he is a specialist in political matters, he will handle the negotiations.
We will be honored to meet with him. Though I doubt his presence there is in any way the coincidence you imply. Thank you, Grand Admiral Thrawn. And until the meeting.
Until the meeting, Lord Superior Boss Mihi, Thrawn said.
He gestured to the crew pit.
Transmission ended, Admiral,
the comm officer confirmed.
Thank you,
Thrawn said, rising almost leisurely from his command chair.
Signal TIE interceptors to stand ready for escort duty. They're to meet the Lord Superior's shuttle as soon as it clears atmosphere, flying in full honor formation. Captain Dorja, I'd like you to meet the shuttle personally and escort the delegation to Conference Room 6-8. Moff Deesra will await you there.
Understood, Admiral,
Dorja said. He strode from the bridge, throwing Deesra a tightly satisfied smile as he passed, and stepped into a waiting turbolift in the aft bridge.
You might have said something,
Deesra muttered a tierce as the turbolift door closed behind the captain. The guardsman shrugged, a microscopic movement of the shoulders.
I wasn't absolutely sure this was what they wanted when they called,
he said, gesturing Deesra through the aft doors toward another turbolift.
But it seemed like a good guess. Croktar has several potentially dangerous neighbors, and intelligence reports the unified factions have become extremely disillusioned by Coruscant's inability to decide how tight a restraining bolt they want to keep on intersystem fighting.
They reached the turbolift and stepped into a waiting car.
Croktar's the first,
Tears continued as the doors closed and they began to move.
But it won't be the last. We already have transmissions from 20 other systems whose governments would like Grand Admiral Thrawn to drop in for a chat.
Deesra snorted.
All they're trying to do is shake up their enemies.
Probably,
Tierce agreed.
But what do we care why they want to rejoin? The point is that they do, and it's going to send shockwaves from here to Coruscant.
Until Coruscant decides to take action.
What action can they take?
Tears countered.
Their own charter specifically allows member systems to withdraw any time they choose.
There was a beep from the turbolift comlink.
Moff Deesra?
Yes?
There's a transmission coming in for you, Your Excellency, under a private encryption designated USK-51.
Deesra felt his stomach try to cramp. Of all the stupid, brainless...
Thank you,
he said as calmly as he could manage.
Have it transferred to Conference Room 6-8 and make sure it's not monitored. Yes, Your Excellency.
Tears was frowning at him.
That's not...
It certainly is,
Deesra bit out. The turbolift doors opened.
Come on, and stay out of sight.
2 minutes later, they were in the conference room with the door privacy sealed behind them. Activating the comm display set into the center of the table, Deesra pulled the proper encryption data card from his collection and slid it into the slot. He keyed for reception.
It's about time!
Captain Zothip spat, his eyes flashing, his bushy blonde beard bristling with anger.
Don't you think I've got better things to do than...
What? Deesra barked. Zothip's head jerked back, his own tirade breaking off midway in sudden confusion.
Do you think you're doing?
Deesra continued into the silence, biting out each word like the crack of a rotten snapstick.
How dare you take such an insane risk? Never mind your precious image,
Zothip growled, some of his insolence starting to come back.
If consorting with pirates is suddenly an embarrassment for you...
Embarrassment is not the issue here,
Deesra said icily.
I'm thinking about our two necks, and whether we get to keep them, or hadn't you noticed how many relays there are in this transmission?
No kidding,
Zothip said with a sniff.
And here I thought it was just your wonderful Imperial comm equipment kicking ions again. So where are you? Out at your vacation home, counting your money?
Hardly, Deesra said. I'm aboard an Imperial Star Destroyer.
Zothip's face seemed to darken.
If that's supposed to impress me, you'd better try again. I've about had my fill of your precious Star Destroyers.
Really? Deesra smiled coldly. Let me guess. You got overconfident, went in blazing, and Admiral Pellion clipped your tail feathers for you.
Don't mock me, Deesra,
Zothip warned.
Don't ever mock me. I lost a Kaloth battlecruiser and 800 good men to that Vader-ripped Kachni. And the payment's going to come out of somebody's hide. Pellion's or yours.
Don't be absurd. And don't try to blame it on me. I warned you not to actually engage the Chimera. All you were supposed to do was make him think Bel Iblis was attacking.
And how did you expect I was supposed to do that?
Zothip shot back.
Insult his family? Transmit lists of ancient Corellian curses?
You pushed an Imperial too hard, and he pushed back, Deesra said. Consider it a useful lesson, painfully learned, and hope you don't need to learn it again. Zothip glared.
Is that a threat?
It's a warning, Deesra snapped. Our partnership's been extremely profitable for both of us. I've had the chance to play havoc with New Republic shipping. You've had the chance to collect the merchandise from those ships.
And have taken all the risks.
Deesra shrugged. Regardless, I'd hate to see such a valuable relationship dissolve over something this trivial.
Trust me, Deesra. When our relationship dissolves, you'll find a lot more than that for you to hate.
I'll start making a list, Deesra said. Now go lace your wounds, and next time you want to talk to me, go through proper channels. This encrypt's one of the best ever created, but nothing's totally slice-proof.
The encrypt's that good, huh? I'll have to remember that. Should bring a good price on the open market if I ever need quick money. I'll be in touch.
He waved a hand off-screen, and the display blanked.
Idiot, Deesra snarled toward the empty display. Moronic, brain-rotted idiot!
Across the table, Tyr stirred.
I trust you're planning to be a little more politic than that with the Croctari, he said.
Deesra shifted his glare from the display to the guardsmen.
What? You think I should have let him cry on my shoulder? Or said there, there, and promised to buy him a new battle cruiser?
The Kavrilu pirates would be a dangerous enemy, Tyrs warned. Not militarily, of course, but because of what they know about you.
Zothip's the only one who really knows anything, Deesra muttered.
Tyrs was right. He probably should have played it a little more calmly. But Zothip still shouldn't have contacted him directly like that. Especially not when he was away from the security of his office. Regardless, he wasn't going to admit an error in judgment in Tyrs' presence.
Don't worry. He's making too much out of this arrangement to toss it all over a single battlecruiser.
I wonder, Tyr said thoughtfully. You should never underestimate what people will do out of pride.
No, Deesra said significantly. Or out of arrogance, either.
Tyr's eyes narrowed fractionally.
What's that supposed to mean?
It means you've pushed things too far, Deesra said flatly. Dangerously far. In case you've forgotten, Flim's job was to inspire the Empire's military and bring them solidly into line behind us. It was never part of the plan to openly provoke the New Republic this way.
I've already explained. Coruscant has no legal basis for action.
And you think that will stop them?
Deesra shot back.
You really think fine points of the law will make any difference to terrified aliens who think Grand Admiral Thrawn is breathing down their necks? Bad enough that you talked me into letting Flim show himself to the Diamolan Senator, but now this?
He waved a hand in the direction of the planet.
The Diamolan incident accomplished exactly what it was intended to,
Tyr said coolly.
It created doubt and consternation, stirred up old animosities a bit more, and silenced some of the last calming voices the rebellion still has.
Wonderful. Except that now this little trick has completely negated that one,
Deesra countered.
How can anyone wonder if the Diamala are lying when a whole planet has seen Thrawn?
Tyr smiled.
Ah, but that's the point. The whole planet hasn't seen him. Only the Lord Superior's handpicked delegation will have seen him. The rest have only their word that Thrawn has returned. And since part of his message to the neighboring systems will be that Kroktar is under Thrawn's protection, his sighting will be as suspect as the Diamals.
You always make it sound so reasonable, Deesra bit out. But there's more here than you're letting on. I want to know what.
Tyrs lifted his eyebrows.
That sounded like a threat.
It was half a threat, Deesra corrected him coldly. Here's the other half.
Reaching into his tunic, he drew the tiny blaster concealed there.
He never even got a chance to aim it. Before the weapon was even clear, Tyrs had thrown himself onto the conference table, the momentum of his leap carrying him sliding headfirst on elbow and hip toward Deesra across the polished laminate. Reflexively, Deesra leaped to his right, trying to move out of reach of the approaching hands. But even as he lifted the blaster, Tyrs rolled partway over and grabbed the center comm display, using it as a pivot point to both change direction and also roll him onto his back, swiveling his feet around in front of him and then pushing off to increase his speed. The maneuver caught Deesra flat-footed. Before he could move again to correct his aim, one of Tyrs's feet caught the blaster squarely across the side of the barrel, sending it spinning across the room. Deesra took a staggering step back, the bitter taste of defeat choking his throat, hands lifted in a futile gesture of defense as Tyrs hopped off the table. He'd had one chance to wrest control of this grand scheme back from the guardsmen, and he'd muffed it. And now Tyrs would kill him.
But once again, Tyrs surprised him.
That was extremely foolish, Your Excellency,
the other said calmly, crossing the room and retrieving the blaster.
The sound of a shot would have had a squad of stormtroopers down on you in nothing flat.
Deesra took a careful breath, lowering his hands.
That works both ways, he managed, knowing even as he said it that the guardsmen wouldn't need to bother with anything so crude and noisy as a blaster if he wanted to kill him.
But Tyrs merely shook his head.
You insist on misunderstanding, he said.
And you insist on working behind my back, Deesra countered. Gaining a system or two isn't worth the risk of scaring Coruscant into action. What's going on that you aren't telling me?
Tyrs seemed to measure him with his eyes.
All right, he said. Have you ever heard the phrase, the Hand of Thrawn?
Deesra shook his head.
No.
You answered that rather quickly.
I was working on this plan long before you came on the scene, Deesra reminded him tartly. I found and read everything in the Imperial records that pertained even remotely to Thrawn.
Including everything in the Emperor's secret files?
Once I was able to find a way into them, yes.
Deesra frowned as a sudden thought struck him.
Is this what your little trip to Yaga Minor last month was really all about?
Tyr shrugged.
The primary purpose was exactly as we discussed, to alter their copy of the Ka'amas document to match the changes you'd already made in the Bastion copy. But as long as I'd broken into the system anyway, I did spend some time looking for references.
Of course, Deesra said. Nothing so crude as a direct lie, simply a conveniently neglected bit of the truth. And?
Tyr shook his head.
Nothing. As far as any existing Imperial record is concerned, the term might not even exist.
What makes you think it ever did?
Tyr looked him straight in the eye.
Because I heard Thrawn mention it once, aboard the Chimera, in the context of the Empire's ultimate and total victory.
Suddenly, the room felt very cold.
You mean like a super weapon? Deesra asked carefully. Another Death Star or Sun Crusher?
I don't know,
Tyr said.
I don't think so.
Superweapons were more the Emperor's or Admiral Dollar's style, not Thrawn's.
And he did just fine without them, Deesra conceded. Come to think of it, he did always seem more interested in conquest than wholesale slaughter. Besides, if there were another superweapon lying around, the rebels would almost certainly have found it by now.
Most likely, Tyr said. Unfortunately, we can't make it quite that final. Did your extensive research into Thrawn's history happen to turn up the names Park and Nuriz?
Park was the Imperial captain who found Thrawn on a deserted planet at the edge of unknown space and brought him back to the Emperor, Deesra said. Nuriz was the captain of the Imperial Star Destroyer Admonitor, which Thrawn took back into the unknown regions on his supposed mapping expedition a few years later.
Supposed?
Deesra sniffed. It doesn't take much reading between the lines to see that Thrawn tried his hand at Imperial Court politics and got his fingers burned. No matter what they called it, his assignment to the unknown regions was a form of exile, pure and simple.
Yes, that was the general consensus among the Royal Guard at the time, too,
Tyr said thoughtfully.
I wonder now if there could have been more to it than that. Regardless, the point is that neither Park nor Nuriz, nor the Admonitor, for that matter, ever returned to official duty with the Empire. Not even when Thrawn himself came back.
Deesra shrugged. Killed in action?
Or else they did come back, but are in hiding somewhere,
Tyr said.
Perhaps standing guard over this Hand of Thrawn.
Which is what? Deesra demanded. You say it's not a superweapon, so what is it?
I didn't say it wasn't a superweapon,
Tyr countered.
I just said superweapons weren't Thrawn's style. Personally, I see only two likely possibilities. Did you ever hear of a woman named Mara Jade?
Deesra searched his memory. I don't think so.
She currently works with the smuggling chief Talon Card,
Tyr said.
But at the height of the Empire, she was one of Palpatine's best undercover agents, with the title of Emperor's Hand.
Emperor's Hand. The Hand of Thrawn. Interesting possibility, Deesra said thoughtfully. But if the Hand is a person, where has he or she been all these years?
Gone to Ground 2, perhaps,
Tyr said.
The second possibility's even more intriguing. Remember that above all else, Thrawn was a master strategist. What could be more his style than to leave behind a master plan for victory?
Deesra snorted. Which after 10 years of Imperial reverses would be totally useless.
I wouldn't dismiss it quite so quickly,
Tyrs warned.
A strategist like Thrawn didn't see battle plans solely in terms of numbers of warships and locations of picket lines. He also considered geopolitical balances, cultural and psychological blind spots, historical animosities and rivalries, and any number of factors. Factors which could very likely still be exploited.
Absently, Deesra rubbed his hand where Tyrs's kick had jammed the blaster painfully against the skin. On the face of it, it was absurd. And yet, he'd read the history of Thrawn's accomplishments, had seen the record of the man's genius. Could he really have created a battle plan that could still be used 10 years and 1,000 defeats later?
What about that 5-year campaign I found in his files? He asked. Was there something in there I missed?
No.
Tyr shook his head.
I've already been through it. All that is a rough outline of what he was planning to do after the Bil Bringi confrontation. If the Hand of Thrawn is a master strategy, he hid it away somewhere else.
With Captain Nuriz and the Admonitor, you think? Deesra suggested.
Perhaps,
Tyr said.
Or else the ultimate victory lies with a person called the Hand. Either way, there's someone out there who has something we want.
Deesra smiled tightly. Suddenly, it was clear as polished transparent steel.
And so, in order to lure that someone into the open, you've decided to parade our decoy around a little.
Tierce inclined his head slightly.
Under the circumstances, I think the risks are worth taking.
Perhaps, Deesra murmured. It assumes, of course, that it wasn't all just a load of tall talk. The corner of Tierce's lip twitched.
I was aboard the Chimera with the Grand Admiral for several months, Deesra. Before that, I watched him from the Emperor's side for nearly 2 years. Never in all that time did I hear him make a promise he wasn't able to carry out. If he said the Hand of Thrawn was the key to ultimate victory, then it was. You can count on it.
Let's just hope whoever's holding the key comes out of hiding before Coruscant gets nervous enough to take action, Deesra said. What do we do first?
What you do first is get ready to welcome the Croctari back into the Empire,
Tyr said. Placing Deesra's blaster on the table, he pulled a data card from his tunic and set it down beside the weapon.
Here's a brief rundown on the species in general, and Lord Superior Boss Mihi in particular,
he continued, starting toward the door.
It's all the data we had on board, I'm afraid.
It'll do, Deesra said, stepping to the table and picking up the card. Where are you going?
I thought I'd join Captain Dorja in escorting the delegation from the hangar bay,
Tyrce said.
I'm rather looking forward to seeing your negotiation skills in action.
Without waiting for a reply, he stepped through the door and was gone.
And to seeing whether or not the royal guardsmen and con man still need the moth, Deesra muttered aloud after him.
Probably, but that was all right. Let him watch. Let Flim watch, too, if he liked. He'd show them. By the time the Croctarian delegation went home, both of them would be absolutely convinced that Deesra wasn't just some tired old politician whose brilliant scheme had somehow gotten away from him. He was a vital part of this triumvirate, a part that was not going to simply fade into the background, especially not with a guarantee of ultimate victory almost within their grasp. He had started this, and by the Emperor's blood, he would be with it to the very end. Sliding the data card into his data pad, he tucked his blaster away into its hidden holster and began to read. There were no planets visible from the bridge of the Imperial Star Destroyer Tyrannic. No planets, no asteroids, no ships, no stars. Nothing but complete, uniform blackness. Except for one spot. Off to starboard, barely visible within Captain Nalgal's view, was a small disk of dirty white, a tiny sliver of the comet head the Tyrannic was riding beside, peeking through the ship's cloaking shield. They'd been flying like this for a month now, completely blind and deaf to the rest of the universe outside their insular existence. For Nalgal, it wasn't really a problem. He'd pulled duty on one of the Empire's most distant listening posts when he was a cadet, and the mere fact that there was nothing outside to look at didn't bother him. But not all of the crew were as tough as he was. The vids and combat practice rooms were getting triple duty these days, and he'd heard rumors that some of the probe ship pilots were being offered huge bribes to take a passenger or two on their trips outside the darkness. At the height of the Empire's power, Star Destroyer crews had been the elite of the galaxy. But that glory was far behind them. And if something didn't break soon, Nalgal was going to have a serious personnel problem on his hands. Outside, there was a brilliant flash from the upper portside quadrant. Relatively brilliant, at least. The glowing drive from one of their probe ships, carefully made up to look like a battered old mining tug. Nalgal watched it as it circled around to vanish beneath the arrowhead-shaped hull toward the hangar bay. No, the unremitting blackness didn't bother him. Still, he had to admit, it had felt good to stretch his eyes there for a moment. There was a step on the command walkway beside him.
Preliminary report from Probe 2, sir,
Intelligence Chief Oisin said in that tone of voice that always sounded to Nalgol like someone smacking his lips.
The warship count around Bothwe has gone up to 56.
56?
Nalgol echoed, taking the other's datapad and skimming the numbers. If he'd remembered the list from yesterday's probe run.
4 new Diamolan ships.
3 Diamolan, 1 Mon Calamari,
Oisin said.
Probably there to counter the 6 Opquist ships that arrived 2 days ago.
Nalgol shook his head in wordless amazement. From the beginning, he'd had quiet but serious doubts about this mission. The idea that the Bothan homeworld would become a focal point for any military activity, let alone a confrontation of this magnitude, had been ludicrous on the face of it. But Grand Admiral Thrawn himself had apparently come up with this scheme. And plagued if old Red Eyes hadn't been right.
Very good,
he told Oisin.
I want Probe 2's complete report filed within the next 2 hours.
Understood, Captain.
Oisin seemed to hesitate.
I don't mean to pry into top-level affairs, sir. But at some point I'm going to need to know what's going on out there if I'm to do my job properly.
I wish I could help you, Colonel,
Nalgol said candidly.
But I really don't know a lot myself.
But you did receive a special briefing from Grand Admiral Thrawn at Moff Deistra's palace, didn't you?
The other persisted.
It hardly qualified as a briefing,
Nalgol said.
He basically just gave us our assignments and told us to trust him.
He nodded in the direction of the comet and the other 2 Star Destroyers riding cloaked alongside it.
Our part is simple. We wait until all those ships out there have battered themselves and the planet into as much rubble as they're going to. Then we come out of cloak and finish them off.
Finishing off Bothwe will be a good trick,
Oisin commented dryly.
I doubt the Bothans have scrimped on their planetary shield system. Thrawn give any idea how he's going to handle that?
Not to me,
Nalgol said.
Under the circumstances, though, I'm inclined to assume he knows what he's doing.
I suppose,
Oisin muttered.
I wonder how he got all those ships to face off like that.
Best guess is that rumor you picked up from your fringe contacts just before we cloaked,
Nalgol said.
That thing about a group of Bothans having been involved in the destruction of Kaar Mas.
Hardly seems something worth getting worked up over,
Oisin sniffed.
Especially not after all this time.
Aliens get worked up over the strangest things,
Nalgol reminded him, feeling his lip twist with contempt.
And from the evidence out there, I'd say Thrawn found exactly the right hot spot to hit them with.
So it would seem,
Oisin conceded.
How are we supposed to know when to come out of cloak and attack?
I think a full-scale battle out there will be fairly obvious,
Nalgol said dryly.
Anyway, Thrawn's last message before we went under the cloak said there would be an Imperial strike team on Bothwe soon, and that they'd be feeding us periodic data via spark transmission.
That'll be useful,
Oisin said thoughtfully.
Of course, knowing Thrawn, he'll probably have the battle timed for the comet's closest approach to Bothwe, to give us the maximum benefit of surprise. That's about a month away.
That makes sense,
Nalgol agreed.
Though how he's going to get them to follow that tighter timetable, I haven't a clue.
Neither do I,
Oisin smiled tightly.
That's probably why he's a Grand Admiral, and we are not.
Nalgol smiled back.
Indeed,
he said. And with that admission, one more layer of his private doubts seemed to melt away. Yes, Thrawn had proved himself in the past, many, many times. However this magic of his worked, it was apparently still working. And under the spell of Thrawn's genius, the Empire was about to get some of its own back. And that was really all Nalgol cared about.
Thank you, Colonel,
he said, handing back the other's datapad.
You may return to your duties. Before you do, though, I want you to check with probe control about whether we can increase our probe flights to twice a day without drawing unwanted attention.
Yes, sir, Oisin said with another tight smile. After all, we wouldn't want to miss out on our grand entrance.
Nalgol turned to gaze out at the blackness again.
We won't miss it,
he promised softly.
Not a chance.
Chapter 2. From somewhere in the deep recesses of his mind came an insistent warbling, and with a jolt, Luke Skywalker snapped out of his Jedi hibernation trance. Okay, R2, he told the droid as he rolled out of his bunk and took a moment to reorient himself. Right, he was aboard Mara Jade's ship, the Jade's Fire, heading toward the Nerauen system, the system where Mara herself had disappeared nearly 2 weeks ago. Okay, I'm awake, he added, flexing his fingers and toes and working moisture back into his mouth. We almost there? The droid twittered in affirmative as Luke snagged his boots, a twitter that was echoed from the direction of the cockpit. The echo was Mara's V1 pilot droid, who had been flying the Fire ever since Luke and R2 had come aboard at the Darun rendezvous point, and who up till now had refused to let either of them anywhere near the ship's controls. An overprotectiveness that was about to come to an end. R2, go back to the docking port and make sure the X-Wing's ready to fly, he instructed the little droid as he headed toward the cockpit. I'm going to take us in. A minute later, he was seated in the Fire's pilot's seat, reviewing the layout of the controls and displays one last time. The V1 droid, perhaps recognizing Luke's expression as one he'd seen often enough on Mara's face, had decided not to argue the point. Get ready, Luke told the droid, resting his hands on the controls. The counter ran to zero, and Luke pushed the hyperdrive lever forward. The star lines flared and shrank back down into stars. They were there. The V1 whistled softly. That's the place, Luke confirmed, gazing out at the distant sun, its tiny red disk looking cold and aloof. The planet Nerauen itself was nowhere to be seen. We're looking for the second planet, he told the droid. Can you get me a reading on it? The V1 twittered an affirmative, and the nav displays came to life. I see it, Luke nodded, checking the reading. It was a pretty fair distance away. Which was by deliberate design, of course. The Fire had impressive shields and armament, but charging to the rescue with quad lasers blazing would be unlikely to do Mara any good, no matter what the situation she was in. Stealth and secrecy were the plan, and that meant leaving the Fire hidden out here while he and R2 sneaked in their X-Wing. He keyed the comm unit to the docking bay. R2, is everything ready? There was a confirming warble. Good, Luke said, looking back at the nav display. They were, he estimated, a good 7 hours away from the planet by the X-Wing's sublight drive. A long time to sit in a cramped cockpit worrying about Mara, besides giving whoever was down there a straight vector back to the Fire. Fortunately, there was another way. Start calculating our two jumps, he instructed R2, keying on the Fire's automatic weapons systems. No more than 5 minutes each way. We don't want to take any more time with this than we have to. R2 twittered an acknowledgement and got to work. Now you're clear on what you're supposed to do? Luke asked the V1 as he keyed the drive to low power and started the Fire moving. There was a convenient clump of small asteroids drifting through in the darkness just ahead that would make a perfect hiding place. I'm going to put the ship in with those rocks, and then you're going to sit there and pretend to be one of them, okay? The droid gurgled reluctant agreement. All right, Luke said, easing the ship up into the asteroids. One of them, about shock ball size, bounced lightly against the hull, and he winced in reaction. The fire was Mara's most prized possession, and she was more protective of it than even the V1 was. If he dented the hull, or even just scratched the paint, he would never hear the end of it from her. He finished his maneuvering with exaggerated care, and managed to get it into position without any further collisions. "Okay, that's it," he said, unstrapping and keying control back to the V1. "You've got the code I gave you. We'll transmit that on our way back so you'll know it's us. Anyone else? Well, don't let the ship shoot at them unless you're fired on first. Not until we have some idea what's going on down there." 2 minutes later, keeping a wary eye out for the floating rock pile outside, he eased the X-Wing out of the fire's docking bay and headed into deep space. R2 had the course already plotted in, and with a burst of starlines, they were off. Luke had told him to keep it under 5 minutes, and the droid had taken him at his word. 2 minutes after heading out, following R2's instructions, he dropped the X-Wing back out of hyperspace, turned it around, and headed back in. 2 minutes after that, they were there. R2 whistled softly. "That's the place, all right," Luke confirmed, gazing out at the dark planet hanging in space in front of them. "Just like the pictures the starry ice brought back. And Mara was down there somewhere. Stranded, maybe injured, maybe a prisoner, or maybe dead." Pushing that thought firmly away from his mind, Luke stretched out to the Force. "Mara? Mara, can you hear me?" But there was nothing. R2 gave a questioning warble. "I can't sense her," Luke admitted. "But that doesn't necessarily mean anything. We're still pretty far out, and she may not be strong enough to reach this far. She could be asleep, too. That would limit her range." The droid didn't respond, but it wasn't hard to guess that his thoughts were paralleling Luke's. And there was also the vision Luke had had 3.5 weeks ago at the Tirfon medical facility. That image of Mara floating lifelessly in a pool of water. "Anyway, there's no point in worrying about it," Luke said, pushing that vision into the back of his mind as best he could. "Do a quiet sensor scan. Nothing that'll set off their detectors. Or at least nothing that'll set them off if they work the way ours do." There was an acknowledgement, and another question scrolled across the X-Wing's computer display. "We'll take the same route in that she did," Luke answered. "Down the canyon to the cave where she disappeared. Once we get there, we'll take the X-Wing inside and see what happens." R2 twittered an uneasy-sounding acknowledgement. Glancing at the course record Talon Card had given him, Luke eased the X-Wing toward the planet, wishing for a moment that Leia were here with him. If those creatures that Mara had run into were intelligent, it might take not only Jedi skill, but also diplomatic finesse to deal with them. Finesse that Leia had, and that he didn't. He grimaced. On the other hand, they probably weren't very happy back home that he'd taken off this way without notice. Let alone if he'd tried to bring Leia along with him. No, Leia's diplomatic skills were needed most back in the New Republic. What skills would be needed here, he'd find out soon enough. They were still well outside the planet's atmosphere when the X-Wing sensors picked up the 2 alien spacecraft rising from the surface toward them. "So much for stealth and secrecy," Luke murmured, studying the sensor profiles. They definitely looked like the ship he and R2 had spotted on their way out of the Kavrloo pirate's nest in the Kauron asteroid field. That ship, though, had cut and run before he could get a close look at it. Now, as this pair rose rapidly toward him, he could see that his first impression of the craft had indeed been correct. Roughly 3 times the X-Wing's size, they were an odd but strangely artistic combination of alien manufacture melded with that of the all-too-familiar TIE fighter design. At the bow of each ship was a slightly darkened canopy, through which he could just barely make out a pair of Imperial-style flight helmets. R2 whistled pensively.
Steady, R2, Luke warned. It doesn't necessarily mean they're allied with the Empire. They might have found a TIE fighter somewhere and borrowed from it.
R2's grunt showed his opinion of that one.
All right, fine, probably not, Luke said, eyeing the incoming ships. A minute later, they were on him, rising slightly above the X-Wing and altering course as they curved into flanking positions on both sides. You getting weapons readings? The droid whistled, and a rough schematic appeared on the computer display. The ships were quite heavily armed. Great, Luke muttered, stretching out with the Force to try to get a feel for the situation. But all he could detect were the basic emotional backgrounds of three beings aboard each ship. Alien minds, thinking alien thoughts, with no point of reference for him to latch onto. On the other hand, their flanking positions were more suited to escort than attack. More importantly, Luke's Jedi senses weren't indicating any immediate danger. For the moment, at least, they were probably relatively safe. And it was time to start acting friendly. Let's see if we can talk to them, he suggested, reaching for the comm switch. The aliens beat him to it.
Kashama Tayorf Karalan,
a surprisingly melodious voice said in Luke's ear.
Kramiro sup tarakliso, marithron nurodo sup pra chinsisk mor korlai.
Luke felt his stomach tighten.
R2? He asked.
The droid warbled a worried-sounding confirmation. It was indeed the same transmission Card and Mara had picked up from the alien ship that had buzzed Booster Tarek's errant venture. The transmission, according to Mara, that had included Thrawn's little-known complete name. Grimacing, Luke keyed his calm.
This is New Republic X-Wing AA-589, he said.
If the aliens didn't speak basic, of course, this wasn't going to do any good. Still, it wouldn't do to just sit here and ignore them.
I'm looking for a friend who may have crashed on your world.
There was a short pause. Watching out the canopy, Luke had the distinct impression that the two alien ships had pulled in just a hair closer to him.
New Republic X-Wing,
the voice came again, this time in quite passable basic.
You will follow us to the surface. You will not deviate from our guidance. If you do, you will be destroyed.
I understand, Luke said.
There was a click from the comm, and suddenly the two alien ships dropped toward the surface. Luke was ready, following and sliding quickly back into his place in the formation.
Show-offs, he muttered under his breath.
He had spoken too soon. A second later, the two ships again twisted away, this time curving slightly up and then hard to starboard. R2 screeched as the portside ship shot uncomfortably close over his head, the tone of his displeasure rising sharply as Luke cut the X-Wing hard over to again match the maneuver. He had barely settled back into his place in the center when they did it again, veering to portside this time. R2 grunted.
I don't know, Luke told him as he caught up with his escort again. Maybe there's some kind of defense system they've got set up that requires a specific approach if you don't want to get blasted. Like the pirates had at their asteroid base, remember?
The obvious point scrolled down the computer display. According to the Starry Ice's record, Mara hadn't followed any such complicated approach.
Maybe they set it up in response to her sneaking in, Luke suggested. Or we could be coming in over a different part of the planet than she did. We haven't been able to pick up a geographic match yet.
R2 grunted.
Or they could be trying to create an excuse to open fire, Luke agreed grimly. Though why they think they'd need one, I don't know.
The alien ships performed three more sets of maneuvers on the way down, none of which Luke had any particular trouble matching. But as they reached the upper atmosphere, they seemed to tire of the game, settling into a hard, straight drive toward the western horizon. Luke stayed in formation, splitting his attention between the ships and the ground far below, and stretching out to the Force for any signs of trouble. They were 20 minutes into their drive, and R2 had finally made a match between the topography below and the Starry Ice's records when the familiar tingling began.
We've got trouble, R2, Luke told the droid. I'm not sure what kind yet, but it's definitely trouble. Give me a quick status rundown. He ran an eye over the display as the status report appeared. There were no other air or spacecraft registering on the X-Wing sensors. Nothing in their escort's power usage or weapon systems that indicated attack preparation, and the X-Wing's own systems were reading fully operative. How far to the fortress Mara found? He asked. R2 beeped. Less than 15 minutes at their current speed. Sometime in the next 10 minutes, I guess, Luke told him. Be ready. Taking a deep breath, settling his hands on the controls, he consciously relaxed his muscles and immersed himself in the Force. They were registering 6 minutes to the fortress, and the canyon Mara had flown down had just appeared paralleling them on the distant horizon when it finally happened. In perfect unison, the two escort ships threw a quick spurt of power to their forward thrusters, dropping from flanking into following positions behind the X-Wing as their velocities blipped down. And from nozzles nestled half-hidden beneath their cockpits, spat a deadly salvo of blue fire. But their target was no longer there. An instant before the aliens' thrusters had fired, Luke had caught the subtle disturbance in the Force. And by the time their weapons flashed, he had thrown the X-Wing into a sharp climb, curving up and around in a tight loop that would take him back around into attack position behind his attackers. Or at least that was the normal endpoint of the maneuver. This time, though, Luke had other plans. Instead of pulling out of his loop behind the aliens, he held the X-Wing's nose pointed toward the ground for an extra pair of heartbeats. Then, at what seemed like the last second, he twisted the starfighter into a stomach-wrenching twin rotational turn. An instant later, they were running bare meters above the ground on a vector perpendicular to their original course. What are they doing? Luke called, not daring to take his eyes away from the landscape long enough to look for himself. The droid's warning screech and a sudden tingling in the Force were his answer. From behind came another volley of blue fire, most of it going wide, but a few shots splattering off his rear deflector shield. Any new friends join them? He called. R2 warbled a negative. That was something, anyway. Still, those ships were good, and the crews clearly knew what they were doing. At 2-1 odds, Luke was going to have his hands full. Especially since... R2 twittered an urgent question. No, leave the S-foils as they are, Luke told him. We're not going to shoot back. The droid's question was a disbelieving whistle. Because we don't know who they are or why they're here, Luke told him, eyes measuring the ground ahead. Just beyond Mara's canyon, the terrain abruptly became something shattered-looking, broken into granite-walled cliffs and deep, sharp-edged crevices. I don't want to kill any of them until I know who and what they are. R2's rejoinder became another screech as the latest enemy salvo blew a thin layer of metal from the top of the starboard S-foil. Don't worry, we're almost there, Luke soothed him, risking a quick glance at his status displays. No serious damage yet, but that wouldn't last long once the attackers got a little closer. Which meant that his best hope was to keep that from happening. Behind him, R2 whistled suspiciously. That's exactly where we're going, Luke confirmed. They were nearly to the shattered landscape now, and off to port side, he spotted a likely-looking gorge. Oh, relax. It's no worse than some of the other things we've pulled off, he added, twisting the X-Wing's nose toward the gorge. Anyway, we haven't got a choice. Hang on. Here we go. Beggar's Canyon on Tatooine had been a tricky but familiar obstacle run of twists and corners and switchbacks. The Death Star Trench had been far straighter, but with the addition of turbolaser fire and attacking TIE fighters to keep it interesting. Now, the Nerowan cliffs took the challenge a step farther by adding unpredictable curves and breakpoints with varying widths and depths, jutting rocks, and clinging tree vines. The newly signed rebel recruit at Yavin would have recognized the risks involved.
Even the cocky adolescent on Tatooine would have hesitated at the stupidity of tackling such an unknown labyrinth at such high speeds. The seasoned Jedi Luke had become, though, knew he wouldn't have a problem with it. He was mostly right. The ship sliced through the first series of twists with ease. Luke's piloting skill and prescience in the Force, combining with the X-Wing's innate maneuverability to leave the alien ships far behind. He shot through an open valley, changed direction toward a new canyon, and nearly lost control as a burst of blue fire raked across the port side fuselage. "It's all right," he called back to R2, feeling a flash of annoyance with himself as the X-Wing plunged again into the relative safety of his chosen ravine. This had happened before. Focusing his attention and the Force too narrowly in one direction had a tendency to blind him to anything happening outside that cone. Clearly, at least one of the alien pilots had been smart enough to abandon the chase and fly up over the maze to wait for the target to show himself. But the gambit had failed, and if the terrain cooperated, he wouldn't get another chance at it. The X-Wing emerged into a second valley, this one smaller than the first, and veered off into another ravine. Letting the Force guide his hands, Luke watched the cliffs around him, looking for just the right place. And then, suddenly, there it was. On both sides of the X-Wing, steep cliffs rose upward, one of them angling sharply toward the other until only a tiny ribbon of daylight showed at the top between them. Lines and clusters of drab and scraggly bushes clung to various parts of the craggy rock, with a thick matting of brown bushes and squat trees covering the canyon floor below. Ahead and behind, the canyon curved sharply to either side, leaving this center part as an isolated bubble surrounded by rock. It was the perfect place to go to ground. R2 didn't squeal or screech as Luke swung the starfighter around.